seen the horror pictures. Rock slides, mud slides, people's homes literally caving in. There's one report of a 7-year-old who was trapped in one of those houses as it caved in. The death toll is now sitting at just over 30, with some people still missing. Are these abnormal weather patterns that happen from time to time, or can we link it all to climate change? We're joined now by Professor of Systems Ecology at Wits University, Prof. Bob Scholes. Prof, good morning. Morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Morning, Mongani.
I mean, just talk to me, take us through climate change 101. Firstly, can we attribute what we are seeing in terms of unusual rain, certainly at this time of the year, to just an anomaly in weather patterns as might happen from time to time, or is it something linked to climate change?
So, Bongani, we can never link a single event to climate change, because climate, by definition, is a pattern of events occurring over an extended period of time. But it is true that the climate change projections are for an increase in severe weather, both on the extreme dry side, such as the droughts that we had recently in the Cape, and extreme rainfall events, such as the one we've recently had in the northern parts of the country. So what really happens with climate change is events which are not unprecedented, like heavy rainfall, but are unusual, become usual. So they become the new normal.
I mean, when we have a conversation about climate change, there are those, of course, who will say that's something that's as old as time, and one can't necessarily link it to human behavior, the so-called climate change denialists. Where are you on that?
So the climate of the world has undoubtedly changed very radically over the last 3 billion years, but that's really not what we're talking about here. We're talking about change which at that scale is extremely rapid, has been over the last century or so, and has been unequivocally linked to the human effects on the global atmospheric composition. There's really no question about that.
So if we talk about pre-industrial age climate, what have we seen happen in the last, 150, 200 years?
Well, it's completely different. We're in what's referred to as a no-analog state. In other words, if you go back for millions of years, the world has never seen anything quite like this. And particularly in the last 10,000 years, the global climate, which is normally all over the show, has been remarkably stable. And that's been the window that has allowed the development of modern human civilization. And we're now stepping out of that window.
So what does that mean for that civilization? What does that mean for the future of the planet?
Yes, for the future of the planet, I'm not concerned. It has gone through, great upheavals in the past, huge extinction events, great changes in its atmosphere. It will survive this. And I think that humans will survive this as well as a species. But whether we'll survive it with elegance and with a functioning civilization which cares for one another and distributes benefits equally and leads to a good quality of life for everyone, that's the big question on the table.
I mean, we're going into an election in just a few days' time, really. This is not an issue that seems to be at the center of any campaign. It doesn't seem to be a big concern on voters' minds. Why should somebody who's listening to us now, Prof, even care about climate change?
It is sort of a design defect of the human mind that we're very good at reacting to urgent problems. We're terrible at reacting to important things that don't seem to be urgent. The irony here is that climate change is now urgent because it's happening already, and there is a big inertia in the climate system. So unless you act now, you're committed to much worse things in a few decades' time. But that's quite a difficult idea to get your head around when you're, facing problems of service delivery and corruption in the here and now.
Sure, but just explain to me, I mean, when you talk about the threat to human civilization as we know it now, I mean, are you painting a dystopian kind of existence? Are we going to Mad Max, that kind of world? What could happen? Give me without being alarmist about it, but give me a realistic scenario if we don't act, or if we don't act fast enough.
So, you know, restricting this to South Africa, on the current sort of pathway that the world is on, that would make large portions of the interior of South Africa essentially uninhabitable and impossible for us to do either crop or animal agriculture in. We would also have very severe problems with our water resources, not only the amount of water, but the quality of water which they're able to deliver. And that is going to put enormous developmental constraints on the country.
We'd all have to move to the coastal cities, is that what you're saying?
Well, there's already a trend of movement to the coastal cities for a variety of reasons. We wouldn't want to get too close to the coast because, of course, the sea level is rising as well. And one of the side effects of the changes in the atmosphere is an acidification of seawater, which, unless we check this current trajectory by the end of this century, would make the sea quite a hostile place for many, many marine organisms. So there's problems all around unless we bend this curve.
Is it fair to say, though, that, you know, South Africa is a bit player? Yes, we may perhaps be, responsible for, significant emissions on the continent, comparatively speaking. But globally, we're a small player. We can't do much. We certainly can't influence the agenda around doing the right things on climate change. What can we do?
So the first part of your statement is correct. South Africa is responsible for about 1% of the problem. But the second part where you said, how can we influence things, is not correct. History is full of circumstances where great movements started in small places. And South Africa has already been very influential in the negotiations leading up to the Paris Agreement, precisely because we are both a developing country and have elements of a developed country. So we kind of can see both sides of that, you know, fundamental divide, which is one of the things holding up, you know, climate change. So there are things we can do. Even as private individuals, the choices that you make around your consumer goods that you buy, for instance, have an enormous effect on the market to deliver, much more climate-friendly solutions.
Yeah. But even in South Africa, I mean, we still have a conversation around coal. We're still having conversations about renewable energy. People, we are told, these are unaffordable, these are unworkable. Eskom is in a mess. We ourselves haven't got some, sort of unity of purpose around where we are going to go. The unions have objections to climate change and renewable, rather not climate change, but renewable energy is being used for our energy mix. We ourselves don't seem to have, the script right, do we?
So we need to separate out the disinformation from the legitimate concerns. So, of course, are people with vested interests in making sure that the status quo continues, and we should really be quite stern with them. But there are also justifiable concerns. You know, we have massive industries which are founded on one set of premises. It would be irresponsible and foolish for us to simply walk away from them, just to abandon them. What we need to do is understand the trajectory here and do a planned and phased, what's referred to as a just transition, out of those into other opportunities. You know, in terms of, for instance, labor, it's not a given that a renewables-based economy will have fewer jobs than a coal-based economy. In fact, there's no evidence to support that whatsoever. But in the transition, of course, some people who used to dig coal will now be erecting solar panels.
Yeah.
And they need to be retrained and redirected and all that sort of thing. So it is disruptive, but the end point of the one is disaster. The end point of the other is a livable future.
A livable future or disaster, that's the stark choice we face. Professor Bob Scholes there, Professor of Systems Ecology at Wits University. My fear is that we will wake up one day and it will be too late.